It's the Exit 52 podcast, instant analysis Sunday night, brought to you as always by Jimmy's Famous Seafood. My name is Jake Luke, and I am joined on my screen, not by Eric, not by Spenny, not by the other two either, too. The other guys, the draft dodgers that tend to find their way on the outside looking into these things. But I am joined by my guy, Zach Bollinger of the Ryan Ripken Show. How are we doing tonight, pal?
I'm doing well. Definitely a lot better after an Orioles dub today than we could be doing, but happy to be here. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, no, man. Good to have you on. We've been kind of, you know, Twitter friends, I guess you could call it, for a while now. We actually got the opportunity to meet sort of by chance back on Friday when the Orioles went in there for Jackson Holliday's home debut. I guess we can, you know, we'll talk about the game, but that was good fun meeting you. And I had already met Rip, obviously, but chilling at the 105.7 tents at Pickles, having a couple beers and having a good time. That was fun.
Yeah, I mean, it's just the magic of Pickles. You know, pregame, you never know who you're going to run into. You never know what's going to happen. We're actually standing in line, and then we're sitting there, Trippy, how's it going? We're sitting there, and then suddenly it was like, oh, hey, how's it going? So awesome. You know, it's the magic of Pickles.
It really is. It has a way of bringing people together. You got to love it. You just got to love it if you're an Orioles fan. You don't really have to love this series if you're an Orioles fan. I mentioned the fact that we were in the house for that game on Friday night, Jackson Holliday's home debut, much fanfare, much ado about really what wound up being nothing with the O's. Kind of a washout of a game just overall from my perspective and from an Orioles perspective. They drop it 11-1. I mean, looking back on that game, do you really have any takeaways from it? I've got obviously the one big story that we can talk about coming out of it, but that didn't even really impact much. What were your kind of thoughts on that one?
It was a fun atmosphere for a little bit. That's about all I got. Benches clearing, that was cool. That was cool. You know, we got to see a very uneventful bench clearing. Got the bullpen given some cardio, you know, running in for nothing. But, yeah, overall, like you said, very much a wash and just kind of one of those games where after about the fifth or sixth inning, you're like, okay, so can we just play tomorrow? Like, can we just end this thing? It wasn't feeling too good.
No, it definitely wasn't. You mentioned the brawl there. And that's kind of what I was talking about there. Did we get a story on what happened? I heard it was like McCann was mad because he thought that, you know, signs were being tipped a little bit there. Did we get any more explanation there?
No, and even weirder, both managers were like, yeah, it wasn't what you guys think it is. It's we're keeping it in-house. So it makes it even weirder of like, what went on? Because everyone thought, you know, did Willie Adames take too much on, you know, did he watch his home run go a little too, you know, long? And everyone thought it was kind of something between Adames and McCann. And then post game, both managers were like, it's being dealt with. Like we're past it. It's we're keeping it in house. And I'm like, it's interesting that they don't want to even say what it was about.
Yeah, no, I don't know. That was a bizarre scene. You know, you feel like when you get those, you know, big bench clearing brawls, you tend to get multiple different stories from both sides about, you know, what they perceive to have happened. And you get all these different explanations and you kind of slice it one way or the other. And, you know, if you're a fan of one team, you'll take that side. Like I'm sure we would if we knew the story for the Orioles, as the Brewers fans probably would for their guys. But yeah, overall, I mean, really the highlight of that, because we never got the story, was your guy behind the home plate there with the reaction.
Yeah, Ryan, he refuses to tell me. Actually, I talked to him today about it, and he said he was just more confused than anyone because it did just happen out of nowhere. It's one of the few bench clearing, you know, brawls where no one's ejected. Everyone just kind of like stares at each other. It wasn't even really heated between anyone else besides McCann and Adames. They just kind of, it happened. Everyone stood around for like 25 seconds and then was like, okay, I guess we can just move on with this game. And by that point, I mean, I think everyone in Camden Yards was kind of ready for the game to be over. So we were like, you know, if we just want to call it now, we can do that.
Yeah, that kind of seemed like the right move. I know like my brother and I, we kind of dipped out. I don't know if we left early necessarily, but it was probably like ninth inning. We kind of made our way out of there with a lot of other people. Yeah, only real highlight from that game, Colton Cowser, he continued his run of dominance, which would continue throughout the series. He belted, was it the solo shot homer?
Yeah, solo shot. And then I guess if we give him his credit, it was a blowout, so I was happy for him. But three-hit game for Joey Ortiz, that was one of those things where I was like, okay, if it was going to happen, I'd rather it be an 11-1 game than him be a nuisance in a game like today where it's close.
Yeah, it gave me vibes of Drew Rahm versus Jack Flaherty last year.
It was exactly like that, where it was like, this is you knew someone was gonna have like a revenge game, and I'll give it to him. Joey Ortiz earned that. He had a good series.
Yeah, he did. And he was, obviously he's a promising player, and you had to give something up to go and get Corbin Burns, who we saw today and we'll talk about. And, they gave up Joey Ortiz and they gave up DL Hall, who started on Saturday. And that wound up being kind of another, I wouldn't call this one a total washout. It felt like the Brewers sort of broke this one open a little bit later in the contest. But yeah, it was DL Hall getting the start, and he kind of got lit up by some of his old buddies, even though the score maybe wouldn't indicate that.
Yeah, Orioles scored. Actually, weirdly, the Orioles got a hit in all but one inning. I believe it was the eighth. But yeah, it was to start. Orioles scored a run in each of the first three innings. You're kind of feeling good. You're like, okay, the Orioles are up. It was 5-4 after the Adley home run. You're like, okay, offense is going today. We found something. Obviously, I know for a bunch of those guys, it had to feel good, especially the guys like Ryan Mountcastle, being able to take his boy yard over 400 feet. So it was fun at the beginning. It was really fun when we were up 4-1. It looked like, okay, the Orioles offense is moving well. Dean Kramer, I still think, pitched actually very well. Errors and just, gosh, this whole series, I've never seen a team just beat out more infield hits or get these, soft bloopers than the Milwaukee Brewers. They are as feisty as it comes, especially at the plate.
Yeah, they are. They've got a lot of attitude. I mean, we saw Rhys Hoskins in like opening weekend, doing the crying thing to the to whoever that was on the other team.
Jeff McNeil.
Jeff McNeil. Yeah, they got some real attitude. I mean, Adames, he obviously got in the fight. Then today we'll get into it. He sort of pimped a fly ball that wound up being ill-fated, which is funny to watch. But yeah, the man, they got some personality to him. And I think that definitely showed both, today and throughout the rest of the series. So it was fun to watch.
Yeah, and it is one of those things where coming into it, you were like, okay, the Brewers, we kind of had all in our mind, once they tried to, trade Corbin Burns and stuff, that, okay, are the Brewers really going to compete this year? Whether is it going to be like, well, through what, 15 games, they have the best offense in baseball. And we got to see, unfortunately, too much of it, it felt like, as an Orioles fan this weekend. Just every single at bat, they felt like they were just putting quality at bat after quality at bat. They'd find holes, and once they got on base, they would manufacture their own runs. I mean, we saw more of that today, but not afraid to steal a base, which can get very annoying.
No, it was. And it's interesting because the Orioles have been kind of experimenting with that a lot too and succeeding with it. We've seen Dunner running a ton. Mullins, when he gets on, Jackson Holliday went first to third today. And he kind of he said that, down in AAA, they tell you every time you get a chance to advance to third, go for it. So I don't know. It feels like maybe that could be a change going on MLB wide this year, because I feel like we're seeing a lot more of it.
Yeah, I think so too. Especially when you have a young team like the Orioles have, you have these young guys that just, they want to always go after it. And I think the Orioles, especially right now, are in the mindset of they'd rather have to reel guys in than have to hype them up and be like, no, you go take that base. So they're going to live and die right now with the Jackson Holidays, the Gunners, with them reading the ball and advancing to take an extra base. And so far, like you said, it's worked out. I mean, I love when Gunnar Henderson is stealing bags. It makes it that much more exciting, because when he gets on base, it's not necessarily that he's the fastest, but his ability to read the baseball, time things well, understand the pitch count, what ball's going to come. He just always seems to pick the right pitch to go on to put himself in the most successful possible situation.
Yeah, and it's good too for an offense that's really struggling with consistency right now. Like, you'll have games like we saw today where they got, they get things going a little bit more consistently. But I mean, man, we've been seeing a lot of just wait until the seventh inning to start scoring. And like, when you're having limited scoring opportunities early on, like just taking every little bit you can get, I think that is a huge help too. So I hope we see it continue, really.
Yeah. And I mean, you hit it right there. This team is two different teams, innings 1-6 and innings 7-9. I don't know what it is. I don't know if they changed the Gatorade at the seventh inning stretch or what it might be, but it's a whole different ball club. Suddenly it's like a switch hits and they're like, okay, we're allowed to score some runs here. And then they just go and find ways to win ball games and close games.
Yeah, and on that Saturday game, we had Jordan Westberg hitting a homer alongside Adley and Mountcastle. It's nice to see those bottom of the batting order guys like contribute. We touched on Kowser a little bit already, but like we haven't even covered the breadth of it. Like he was amazing in the series, but Westberg, you know, not to be slept on either. He had the walk-off home run, obviously. Then he had the one that he shot over the monster to give him the win up in Boston, you know, a couple nights ago. So yeah, it's just nice to see. Even like in that sort of blowout loss that it wound up being, it's nice to see that, you know, they can switch it on when they need to. And it would be nice if they could string together a series where they just, you know, the bats are working innings, if not 1-9, like most of 1-9 for three straight games. But we haven't quite seen it yet. So it's nice that they're able to generate it when they need to at the very least and, you know, try to stay competitive in these things.
Yeah, it's one of those things where the Orioles lead the league in comeback wins. And it's super fun. Like, you know, you love to, you know, it's exciting and all that. But at the end of the day, I'd prefer if we could just have a few games where, you know, maybe we actually just, like you said, lead the whole game and we don't have to suddenly, it's the eighth inning and we have guys on. It's like, okay, we got to go get the winning run on deck or whatever it may be. I'd like to have a little less stressful game. Maybe just pull off like a 6-2 win where we score, like you said, just runs consistently and it's not, oh, we're down 2-0 going into the ninth, and then we score 6 runs.
Yeah, for sure. And I thought Dean had a solid game on Saturday as well. You brought that up. But, like, even in Dean's best starts, not to rag on him, but, like, he does, like, he'll have a couple, like, loud outs. And, like, sometimes those will trickle through for an error or something, and then that gets a rally going. And he just seems to have a little bit of bad luck at times. But overall, a solid performance. But it kind of made me wonder a little bit about this pitching staff. Like, you really need – it feels like if you're going to feel really confident about a game, you've got to have one of those top two horses in Grayson or Corbin on the mound. And if you don't, it feels a little bit more like a toss up right now. And that kind of made me wonder about Elias's comments about Kyle Bradish that he made on Saturday, where it sounds like this tune up, this rehab stint is going to be starting sooner than we expected, maybe.
Yeah. So apparently he's going to go to Bowie this week, which is massive news for the Orioles. I think it can't be put lightly how big that is, because honestly, in a lot of cases, I wasn't even sure if we would get to this point in his rehab, because he's now done throwing bullpens. You know, it started off as, oh, he's only tossing on the ground, you know, flat ground, and he can't throw too much. And he's doing pitching fielding drills, but he's not allowed to throw during them. We all saw the videos during spring training, and it was like, what are we doing right now? He's fielding ground balls, then tossing it, taking his glove off and tossing it with his left hand. And you're like, is this guy ever going to pitch this year? But it's give Elias and them credit. They said the whole time that they had a timeline for him. And so far he's sticking to that timeline, and it seems to be going as well as they had hoped it could go. So I think that is extremely exciting news for just the Orioles period, because if you get him back and he can return to anything like he was last year, you now have three potential aces with Bradish, Grayson, and Corbin. So that is something, like you said, right now it's, you feel great when Grayson's on the mound, you feel great when Corbin's on the mound. After that, it's been a toss-up so far this year. So it'd be nice to get that third ace back in the rotation. And then obviously John Means, he's been throwing down there, and I think they probably give him 2 or 3 more starts just to keep ramping up the pitch count. But that's another guy that hopefully can add a little bit more stability.
Yeah, Bradish threw a bullpen in Camden Yards, I think, on Saturday before the game. So, yeah, they're ramping him up. And you're right. I was kind of getting worried, too. It reminded me a little bit of what they were doing with Bautista last year, where it felt like they were kind of teasing us a little bit. Like, oh, you know, he's throwing this and he's doing this simulated session and that. And then ultimately they wind up shutting him down. I definitely have my fears that was what was going to happen with Bradish. But, yeah, no, man, it sounds like they're planning on having him pitch this year, which will be very nice to see. And you mentioned Means as well. I think he's another guy who's a little bit of a wild card. He had his ups and downs last year, but overall, if you can get him back into the rotation here, I think that would be nothing but a net positive right now. Cause like we're talking about, the depth with the starters isn't looking great.
Yeah. And then it also helps the bullpen, because then you are adding, whether it is a Cole Irvin, whether it is a Tyler Wells, someone who goes into the bullpen and has the ability to eat innings if something were to go wrong, if a starter doesn't go as long as they were hoping. It just adds the depth that much more and makes it that much more valuable to the bullpen. So it really is just one of those things where once you get those two hopefully back soon, then you can kind of readdress after a little bit of, okay, how is our pitching staff? And then I'm really hoping it's soon enough where they can, you know, evaluate it all. And then they can decide, okay, trade deadline's coming up. Do we need to make a move? Are we good with these guys? You know, are they pitching well? So I think that will add into a lot of, I know people, it's only 2 weeks in and you would think that the trade deadline's tomorrow. People are like, why have we not made a trade yet? It's like, you gotta tone it down a little bit. We have to see what we have still with those two because they're massive wild cards. They could come in and look like their former selves and suddenly Orioles have a top rotation in the league, or they come in, it's not working, you know, things aren't feeling right. And you're like, okay, we need to add someone.
Yeah, and you're right with the bullpen as well. It feels like even in the best of games, it feels like they're really working their way, just churning their way through that thing. Like you can never get just a guy, like unless it's Corbin or Grayson, you know, most of the time you can never get a guy to just go six or even seven and then like have Cano come in for the eighth and then Kimbrel come in for the ninth. It feels like they're just working their way through. It'll be a little bit of Bauman here, a little bit of Webb here, a little bit of Coulomb here. Like it just feels like they're really wearing these guys out. So I think you make a good point there.
Yeah, and man, I will say one of the guys I feel awful for so far this year is Mike Bauman, because it feels like it doesn't matter how rested or unrested he is. If they get into a situation like the sixth, seventh thing, they're like, okay, Mike, you got to go out there. And it's like, He's pitched like three straight games and they're like, hey, dude, like we have no one else. So you got to go out there. So it's definitely kind of, you know, sucks for him in that situation. I love that he's getting the opportunities, but I would like for it to, I think he would be much more successful if he wasn't pitching four times in 5 days.
Yeah, that's a really weird kind of schedule for a reliever to go on, especially a guy like him who I feel like is so rhythm based. Like he can kind of get lost at sea if, like, you know, he goes out there and has a tough couple first pitches or maybe like a loud out or one that falls in on him. I don't know. I feel like he's a little bit of a confidence based guy. And I feel like it hasn't quite been there to start the year, unfortunately.
Yeah. And he's one of those guys where, you know, Jim Palmer has talked about it. He's got a dominant fastball. When he is really relying on his fastball to set up his other pitches, he can be great. But then you see stretches where I think it was last week, he threw like seven straight sliders and walked a guy. And you're like, Mike, like the first two batters all swung and missed because they couldn't catch up to your fastball. Like keep feeding that. And then he's, you know, getting called sliders and all this. And you're like, That's not who you are. You know, you're not that guy. You beat them with your speed. He can throw up to 100 miles an hour. It's like you don't need to get cute all of a sudden. You know, hit him with your cheddar.
Yeah, he's got some Kenny Powers vibes too with the hair. You wish he would kind of just embrace that scumbag nature and kind of just like start throwing gas and like not worrying about the result.
Yeah, exactly. If he could grow like a mustache too, it would just completely, it would complete the whole thing. I think it's an underrated, you know, thing for bullpen guys. A mustache seems to always help a guy's ERA. I don't know what it is, but a solid mustache seems to really help pitchers.
Yeah, it does. It feels like you always catch those guys like, you know, that are like, you know, 10-year veterans that are in some AAA stint, and they always have the gnarliest, I feel like, kind of some Bull Durham vibes a little bit.
Oh, it's completely. It's like the guy is like 33. He's like played for six different organizations and he's only played like a combined 35 games in the majors, but like throughout like 9 years, and he's just chilling in the minors still. And he's like, yeah, no, this is what I do. He's got just the gnarliest mustache. He throws like 96, but he thinks he throws 105, that kind of vibe.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a great vibe. I'm a big fan of it. And hopefully Mike Bauman can embrace more of that. But I guess moving on to today's game, I guess just ask you right off the bat, what were your thoughts on Corbin today? I thought he looked a little greasier than usual, but he gets out of there with the win again.
Yeah, this was, I think, by far the worst we've seen Corbin Burns. And it's kind of weird to say that after he, I guess only technically around allowed two earned runs. The one unearned run was because of his error, which I still never will understand how a pitcher can allow a run on an error that they committed and it's still unearned, but you know, whatever, baseball is baseball. I was actually really impressed with Corbin today, but for different reasons. And it was, there were so many times that this game should have gotten out of hand, that the, you know, Brewers looked like they were about to put up a 5-6 spot in, you know, the third, fourth innings. You know, we got guys on second and third, no out. You know, guys always felt like they always had ducks on the pond, and it just felt like no matter what it was, as soon as Corbin gave up one, he was like, I don't care how many guys are on base, that's it. So it was nice to see him work out of those situations and have the ability to just kind of stop the bleeding on just almost like a standstill. Like they would get a guy in, all of a sudden two guys are on and he's like, yeah, they're not scoring anyway. So would I like for him to look more like he has before, where he's going out seven, you know, one run innings? Yeah, that would be dope. But at the same time, it was nice to see him in a different situation where he doesn't have his ace stuff again. And he goes out there and just gets the job done, continues to put the team in positions to win.
Yeah, the word that I wrote down was grit. That's kind of what it felt like. You know, it felt like in a couple of his first starts, it was just very much that show pony type thing where he'd go out there. And I mean, even today, he gave up his obligatory one run shot there to open the proceedings. And then you expect him to, after that, you settle in like he has in the other games. Didn't quite work out that way today, like you said. But again, it was only the one other earned run. And then obviously he probably should have had one called on him, but that's neither here nor there. But yeah, just kind of gritty. Like, he settled in, he fought and he battled. And I think it reflected nicely to his comments, you know, before the series, where he was asked, like, do you think you have a advantage against this Brewers lineup? Because you know them pretty well. And he said, I think I have an advantage over every lineup. And I think I said before the series started, like, there's just a real quiet confidence with the guy that, like, only winning a Cy Young or like having the type of accolades that he does, or maybe a World Series, can get you.
Yeah, he does have that. Just and he doesn't say it in a cocky way, which is just, I love that known lunch pail guy. He just goes out there and gets it done. Also, one of my favorite things about Corbin Burnes, and it's not even related to all this, he just refuses to believe the fact that a pitcher should not be fielding pop-ups. It doesn't matter where the pop-up is. He goes and chases after it. And I saw there was a compilation of it actually on YouTube of him doing it in Milwaukee, where he just runs after balls in foul territory, even though it's not supposed to happen. So that is what he does. He trusts himself and he's like, hey, if that ball's in the air and I have an opportunity to go get it, I'm getting myself the out. You know, he doesn't care about, okay, you know, not unwritten rules, pitchers aren't supposed to catch it. He is going to do whatever it takes to go get out. And like you said, it's just grit. He goes out there and he pitches almost the exact same way every time. And I loved when they did the steal that scored home. So they stole second, or an attempt to steal second. Adley throws through and Perkins scores. Corbin Burnes, Gronk spikes the glove. And honestly, I thought that's when he was going to shut him down. I thought that was going to be the opportunity where we were like, okay, Corbin's done. But yeah, he didn't have his A stuff today. I bet he would probably even argue he didn't even have his B stuff. He definitely didn't have a feel for the ball. But that Brewers lineup, at the same time, they fouled off so many pitches and they just refused to ever quit. I know I saw the one time against Frelich or whatever, he starts 0-2. I believe it was five straight 0-2 foul balls. It's hard to beat a team, you know, and go deep into games where you get ahead of them, but they just refuse to quit on any at bat.
Yeah, that's got to be so frustrating as a pitcher. Like, you're just fighting it out. You feel like, you know, you feel like you should be getting by them, but, you know, it's 3-2, and then you wind up, you know, throwing 12 times at a guy, and, you know, he just keeps making contact. That's got to be so freaking annoying. But, yeah, I mean, a solid outing from him for the scoreboard perspective, which is really all that matters. They get another win with him on the bump. So what does that move him to 3-0 on the year?
Yeah, I believe so. And I think it's now what the Orioles also themselves are 4-0 in his start. So he's 2-0, but okay, the Orioles are 4-0 in games that he has started. So I guess that's the stat that really matters, is how many times are you putting your team in the position to win?
Yeah, exactly. And I think, again, we mentioned the bullpen. It was a solid inning outing for them. But it was kind of another one where it was a little bit of Cano. He lets up a solo shot. Another strong showing from our boy Danny C. And then Kimbrel, I guess that was a save today, correct? So another save for Kimbrel. Yeah.
Yeah. And Kimbrel, I will say, he is, besides that first game, I enjoy watching him pitch so much. I mean, just, he is such a strikeout pitcher, and he's another guy. He's another guy like Corbin Burnes, where he has so much confidence in himself. And he just wants to go out there and compete. He doesn't care what it is. He's going to go out there. He doesn't care who he's facing. He's going to try to strike you out. He's going to try to get you out. And 3 Ks today. And he's just, I know Philly fans were not, they let Oriole fans know their feelings about Craig Kimbrel when he signed. But so far, I've really enjoyed watching him. Yeah, no, I've never heard Philly fans ever be mad at players. But I guess this was the first time.
Yeah, interesting. No, yeah, you're right. They were they did make it known, just like Red Sox fans are like, oh, this guy, you know, he's, you know, way past his prime when he was with us and all that kind of stuff. A lot of people love to have their fun with this signing, but so far it's working out pretty darn well. And to your point, strikeout pitcher, that's always fun to watch, especially like you never want to have a reliever, especially not a closer, who's like nibbling a lot and just trying to like get away with stuff. Like he's facing guys man to man and saying, no, I'm putting this one right in the zone. You can take a hack at it and we'll see what happens, but I'm not backing down. I'm a big fan of his so far.
Yeah. And I mean, how can you not love the, you know, the stare down? It's just, it gets me going every time. It just gets me fired up. It's like, okay, it's almost like a symbolic thing now where when I see it, it's like, okay, we have a chance to go win this ball game.
Yeah. It gives you those good vibes because, you know, why else would he be in there other than trying to seal up a win? What is the story behind that? I'm sure he's talked about it. I've just never heard it.
I honestly don't even know. I think he said he's just been doing it like his whole life. And just like, that was something he did. And I just could you imagine like Little League, like some 9-year-old kid is just out of nowhere for no reason, just throwing his arm up. Like, I wonder if like someone must have taught him that. Like, there's no way that he just decided like, this is what I'm going to do. And no one was like, hey, stop doing that. Like, there's gotta be a reason.
Yeah, it made it. I always thought when he was in Boston, like I always thought it was like a technique thing. Like it's so specific. Like you would think that he's like maybe trying to activate a muscle or something, but I don't know. Maybe not. Yeah. That's bizarre.
Yeah, no, but it was, you know, like we said, it whatever works. If he's going to strike out 3 batters every time he goes out and does that, he can do backflips before he pitches for all I care.
No doubt. No doubt. Story of the day. Little Jackie Holliday. Finally getting that first hit. He breaks that, was he 0 for 11 or 0 for 12 streak?
0 for 12,
yeah. He breaks that up with a hit into right field for a single, and he would later score. We mentioned the first to third run today. He was running hard. That was nice to see. Slides in there. Big, big smile on his face. $1 million smile after Gunner puts him in there. It was an RBI single by Gunner, and that put him on to third, and then he would score later. So yeah, that was nice to see. And he was kind of speaking with Masson after the game. He was kind of brief, which I liked. Like he didn't, you know, make it too much about himself or like breaking the streak or the hit. He was very sort of understated and subtle about it, which I thought was really nice. But overall, finally breaks that slump, and hopefully it's nothing but upwards from here for Jackson Holliday.
Yeah, I've watched it like 10 times. I love after he gets to first and he rounds it and goes back, the sigh of relief he takes of like, thank God, it's finally over. Like I can just move on. And then, you know, we already touched on it, but that first to third is so much more important than people even realize, because next batter, Adley, grounds it to the double play that scores Jackson. If Jackson doesn't go first to third, the Orioles are going into the ninth with eighth with a tie game instead of with the lead. So that was such a massive, you know, it's the little things, you know, it's like the little things that Gunner does that make over time add on to so many wins. And you get the same feeling from Jackson Holliday that he's going to go make those tiny plays that in the long run, we look back now and we're like, hey, that was part of the reason we won the game, is because Jackson's ability to go read it and go, okay, I got to take third base here.
Yeah, margins are razor thin a lot of the time, especially with the way that they've been keeping these games close throughout the start of the year. So, I mean, hopefully they can make things more comfy in the later innings moving forward, like we talked about. But if not, like, you got to do the little things well. And as these guys grow up a little bit, especially Gunner and Adley and, you know, some of those guys who are going to be veterans before we know it, I mean, those are the things that you want to have down. So great to see you today.
Yeah, and I got to give him, because he's my guy. Jordan Westberg starting off the rally there, you know, poking one into a left field. He's one of those guys, we talk about lunch pail guys. I don't think he's ever going to be someone that we look up and is batting, you know, 300, 320, but he'll bat 270, but when his number's called in the big moment, he's going to produce every single time. Like we said, the massive home run against Boston, he had the walk-off home run against Kansas City. It just feels like whenever the lights are the brightest and the moment's the biggest, you want Jordan Westberg up at the plate right now.
Yeah, definitely. He's turned into just a cold-blooded killer, it feels like. Like we mentioned the clutch moments from him throughout the year, to start with the walk-off and then putting the one over the monster, and just no change in expression. Even Cowser, he's pretty stoic. Cowser he's a fun guy, you can tell, and he lets that show a little bit. Westberg, it's a flat line, and that's really cool to see, you know, in a young guy like that, because all these other guys, they're out there having fun and he's participating and they're, you know, they're doing the dong bong and all that, but he kind of plays his cards close to the vest. It's really fun to watch.
Yeah, I have this theory that he's just slowly each day turning more and more into JJ Hardy. It just feels like they now even look identical. I swear when he's like playing the field, I'm like, that's JJ Hardy out there. Just the same thing. He's like, he's never going to get two up, never going to get two down. He's just straight face assassin. He's just like, okay, I'm going to go out there and do what I have to do to help win. Actually made a bunch of great plays at third today as well, catching a few line drives. And he's just one of those guys that I'm not sure what his role will be, especially when more guys come up like the Kobe Mayos who have to get in this lineup and play third base. But he's someone that you're going to have to find a way to get into the lineup 9 out of 10 times because he just keeps producing.
Yeah, him and Kowser, like their bats have kind of carried them the last couple of games, especially in high leverage situations. Like, I mean, you got to find a way to, you know, keep him in the rotation and keep that bat firing because it's been one of their better ones throughout the year. But yeah, speaking of that, Kowser, another homer today. Mullins had one as well, and O'Hearn knocked one out there as well. So, you know, it continues on where Gunnar, you know, he's certainly had his moments this year, and Santander has as well, but Santander has really struggled in particular the last couple games. And it's just these guys at the bottom of the order, you know, the Mullins, who hasn't been as productive as you would have thought, but he's definitely he's turned it on throughout the series at times. And then obviously O'Hearn just continues to be just a consistent like hitter, and especially in the clutch, like it's just amazing to see what they've done with that guy when he was like a nobody in Kansas City. And then Colton Kowser, I mean, holy shit, like MVP conversation right now for that guy, like unironically.
Yeah, no, that's why I keep saying, you know, everyone's going rookie of the year. I'm like, whoa, he keeps doing this. We are way past rookie of the year. I'm like, we're talking MVP type status. But I'll even say that I think this was his most impressive home run because we've seen him. We all know he's gotten all the at-bats against righties. Lefties is what he struggled with. And even this year, he has not looked great against lefties in the limited opportunities he's had against them. Against a very crafty lefty, he gets jammed on the inside, 88 miles an hour, beautiful pitch, and he just finds a way to get it over the fence. And honestly, this is probably my favorite home run so far of Colton Kowser, even though obviously the Boston one, as you know, extra innings, we see it fly, and he kind of watches it for a second, the three-run bomb to push it to 6 runs and kind of solidify that game as like, okay, this one's over. I guess even in this case, that second insurance run, you just felt so good about it afterwards. But Colton Kowser, man, it feels like if I want anyone up at the plate at any moment, doesn't matter if it's the clutch, if it's to lead off the game, you could throw anything up there and he's going to probably put it out.
Baseball is so regional. And can you imagine being a Brewers fan, like coming into this game today and watching it and be like, oh man, like Adley Rutschman, Gunnar Henderson, they just called up Jackson Holliday, like Santa, like we got to worry about all these guys. And then it's like Ryan O'Hearn and it's Cedric Mullins and it's Colton Kowser and it's Jordan Westberg just hitting the cover off the ball. I mean, it's insane.
Yeah, I think they talked about it on Masson today. Jordan Westberg's average just batted ball velocity is 94 miles per hour exit velocity. And technically stats, 95 miles an hour better is considered a hard hit ball. So he's a guy that's just absolutely tearing the cover off the ball. Then you have Colton Kowser doing it. And then Ryan O'Hearn, I mean, we've talked about it already, but he's a guy that you can't take him out of the lineup, especially against righties. Obviously, he doesn't play against lefties. But I see so many people saying, you know, oh, you know, let's put Kerstead in there instead. You know, let's go bring Kobe Mayo up instead. I don't see a way you can take Ryan O'Hearn out of this lineup because every time he's up, he is producing. And, you know, we saw today, 2 RBIs. You know, first inning, he gets the single, there's a reason he's batting fourth. You know, it's so weird to think that they got him, you know, picked him up last year, actually DFA'd him after we picked him up, went back and then came back. So didn't even think he'd play in Baltimore for a little bit, you know, didn't even make the opening day roster last year. Now, suddenly, if you're going to rank guys that I trust the most at the plate when, you know, it means the most, it's probably Ryan O'Hearn.
I think you're right. I mean, it's just, and you know, I tweeted it out today. It's the old John Rothstein, more consistent than a few good men on a rainy Sunday. Like he's just always going to be there for you, it feels like. And especially in those high leverage spots, being right in the middle of the order there, it kind of puts you in those situations a lot. And, you know, he tends to come through. So great, great, great stuff from Ryan O'Hearn. But overall, I mean, you know, Orioles lose the series. Hopefully they don't make a habit of this. They lost another one to Pittsburgh, obviously. But, you know, still yet to be swept, which is nice to see. We'll knock on wood for that. But just general thoughts right now. Orioles sitting at 9-6. They are second in the AL East, but behind your 12-4 Yankees up in the Bronx.
Yeah, I feel great. The Orioles have played, as funny as it sounds to say out loud, because all I heard over the offseason was the Orioles have to start out hot because they're playing the easiest schedule in all of baseball. You know, it's, oh, the first month of the year is, you know, going to be so easy for the Orioles. They should be 24-5, whatever it may be. The Orioles have played 15 games, and every single one of them has been against a team that is currently 500 or better, and most of them are leading their division. And then you look at the Yankees, everyone's, oh, the big bad Yankees. You know, the Yankees are back. They're doing all this. Yankees have played 3 games this year against teams above with a record above 500. So it's almost kind of like a reverse right now. Like, yes, the Orioles are not hitting on all cylinders, but they have found a way to be 9-6 against a very good schedule.
Yeah, something tells me it's not going to get much worse than this or look a lot worse than this. You know, guys are going to find their groove, I think, to an extent. Water is going to find its level. I think Santander is going to have to start playing a lot better. I think Gunner is going to need to be a little bit more consistent. I think Adley maybe get a little bit more power behind that bat. But other than that, I mean, Mountcastle playing well. Like we keep saying, the bottom of that batting order is doing their thing. And yeah, man, you want some more pitching depth. But like other than that, you steered the ship to 9-6, like you said. And, you know, like you said, the schedule has been a lot harder than people were anticipating. That Royals team in particular looking really good, who you won a series against. I mean, it's just it's definitely it's one of those things where the narrative, you tend to think one thing is going to happen and then it goes the other way. And like you mentioned, the big bad Yankees, 12-4, they're just kind of beating up on some, you know, maybe some less than stellar competition. And then everyone's kind of getting all high on the Red Sox supply. And then the Orioles go up into Boston and they swept them. And now that's looking a little bit less impressive. So I think, yeah, I think overall you're right. Water is going to find its level here. 9-6 is a fine, fine record for them.
Yeah. I mean, it's one of those things where if you went online and read, you know, all the fun Twitter things, you would think the Orioles were in dead last in the AL East. The Orioles are in second place, 2.5 games back. And the way I keep talking about it is, I watched the Rays go 13-0 last year, and people handed them the AL East title after 2 weeks, less than 2 weeks of baseball. And we saw how that worked out. It is a marathon. Orioles are actually 1 game better than they were at this point last year. We saw how that worked out. I love how you put water is going to level out. It's going to, everyone's going to get back at Anthony Santander. He is who we think he is. He goes through about 2 weeks of, you're like, this guy can't do anything. And then the next 2 weeks, you're like, this is the greatest hitter that I've ever seen on the face of the earth. He hits everything. He's batting like 700 over a 2 week span. So you just hope that we can, you know, recapture that Tony in a few weeks, you know, or a few days, hopefully.
Is he, does he have to be demoted to Tony Potato Skins for the time being? Cause you know, Taters.
He might have to.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, what we haven't had, I guess he got probably the most confusing Tater of his entire career against Boston, where the Red Sox get out of the inning with a double play, and then Masson welcomes us back, and Tony is up, and then before they even explain what's going on, they're like, we're back. Tony hits one right by the pesky pole, as short of a home run as you literally can have in Major League Baseball. So it was one of those things where I was watching it actually with a bunch of friends, and we were like, was that a replay? Like what just happened?
Yeah, I was watching the Nesson feed, and they were kind of all over it. They were like, yeah, he did not touch second. Like, we're going to come back, and the Orioles are going to get another go at this thing. So I was on it, but then I looked at Twitter, and everyone was like, what the hell's going on? It's funny to, as much as I wish I didn't have to, you know, watch games in the way that I do, Masson, figure your shit out, please. That is always kind of a funny dynamic when that stuff happens.
Yeah, no, that was, it's super funny you said that, because, like, all Red Sox fans, everything, everyone who was watching Nesson immediately was like, what do you mean you're confused what's happening? It's like, we literally got back and the ball was pretty much in the air. And then we were up by one run because, you know, instead of down by one, but we don't know how that happened. Like that was probably one of the more confusing times I've ever had watching Orioles baseball. Cause I'm like game planning for the ninth inning. I'm like, well, I got to get us out 3 more times. I'm like, Tony starts it off next inning. Then suddenly Tony's up. And I'm like, did we get out of that inning without me even noticing? And then they're like, I'm like, why is the guy on second base? And then suddenly we're winning the game. So Yeah, I'll take it, but I'm not going to pretend like I understood it in the moment.
Yeah, you got to take your breaks when you can get them, because you're not going to get them too often in this sport we call baseball. It is just too cruel, as we've seen with little Jackie Holliday and some of these guys struggling in their slumps. But overall, great to see him get a hit today. Great to see this team get a win today and avoid that sweep. And it's been a fun one talking to you about it, my friend. Thank you for joining me. And how about before you get out of here, we plug some of your stuff, your social media, what you're doing with Ripken and the boys. How about you go for it?
Yeah, I appreciate you having me. Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter at ZachBollinger18 right here. And then Ryan Ripken Show. We do stuff every Monday and Thursday, sometimes Sundays, sometimes special things. It just honestly, it all depends. But you can catch me there. We got some cool stuff coming out this week. But really appreciate you having me on. I'm glad we got to finally meet at Pickles and lead to this.
Yeah, absolutely. It was a fortuitous little meeting there, like we said. And here's to many more of them. And here's to all the continued success with you guys in the show. You're doing a great job of it. And keep it up.
Hey, you too, man. I love the show.
Absolutely. All right. Thank you all for listening very, very much. You can find us on social media at Exit 52 Podcast, across the board on Twitter, Instagram, TikTok. I am at Jake Luke. That's LOUQUE. You can find Spencer at Ravens 4 Dummies. That's the number 4. Eric at EDITTI22. Brian at Barstool Banks, and Taylor at Taylor Smythe 10. And while you're here, how about you go ahead and subscribe to the YouTube page? Leave a nice comment down below if you like what you saw to help pump our algorithm. And in the meantime, we'll talk to you guys very soon. Thanks for listening.